Welcome to Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. Want to connect with Howie? Email him at howie@israelnewstalkradio.com. Now here's your host, Howie Silberger.
We live in strange times indeed. Very, very strange times. Two terror attacks happened in the United States this week. And the world is going crazy. The media is all over it. We know the names of all the terrorists. We know the names of the victims. We have a motive and we know why the terror attacks happened. We know how they carried it out. It seems like every little detail of the terror attack against Americans has been investigated and has been vetted and has been condemned by everybody in the world. It's undeniably very quick and very effectively condemned. But then we look at what's happening in Israel, with bombs indiscriminately falling on the heads of Israeli citizens, fired from terrorist countries like Yemen, like Iran. Not a peep. So the indiscriminate killing of Americans is far more important to the world than the indiscriminate killing of Israelis. The indiscriminate attack on the American population through terrorism is far more important to the world and to the media and to everybody else than the indiscriminate attack on Israeli civilian populations. When we talk about war crimes, and I know the International Criminal Court sent out a warrant for Netanyahu's arrest for committing war crimes in Gaza. When we talk about war crimes, why is nobody talking about bombs, rockets, missiles that have been landing on Israeli civilian populations, which is a direct violation of international law? And it's been doing this has been happening for 20 years, a little more than 20 years. Why has nobody at all yelled at the people launching these bombs, the people who are distributing these bombs, people who are manufacturing these bombs, should be held accountable with war crimes? They should be brought to the International Criminal Court on war crime trials. Why is nobody demanding that? Why is nobody demanding that? It seems kind of ridiculous to me that this hasn't been brought up. Nobody's demanding it. The media's not demanding it. Nobody's saying a word. Netanyahu's crimes against Gaza, as they call it, is that he launched a defensive attack against Gaza, who had attacked Israel. He launched a defensive maneuver. He was defending his country. He was doing what every government in the world would have done had a foreign army entered their country and killed as many civilians as were killed on October 7th, 2023. It doesn't make any sense that these condemnations haven't happened and that the world has continued to allow the indiscriminate bombing of a civilian population. And nobody, no human rights organization, nobody has called in and has gotten up and said, hey, this is wrong. You can't launch missiles onto innocent Israeli populations. You can't do this. It's wrong. Civilians can't be attacked. But apparently they can, but only in Israel. Apparently Israeli civilians don't count as civilians. Apparently human rights organizations don't see the human rights of Jews and of Israelis. They don't see. They refuse to see. They refuse to recognize the rights of Israelis. We talk about October 7th ad nauseum because it is the closest thing we have, the most recent massacre, genocidal attack on the Jewish people. But when we think about it, that genocidal attack didn't start on October 7th. It started in 2006 when the Israelis vacated. They left. They abandoned Gaza. They pulled out every man, woman, child. They pulled out every grave, every pet, every fire hydrant, every building There was no trace of Jews left in Gaza when Jews left. They took everything. They gave the Arabs a state that they could call Palestine or whatever they wanted to call, and they could have created a nice, peaceful country. The only thing they left was a bunch of lefty philanthropists had bought the greenhouses and the factories that were in Gaza that had manufactured billions of dollars worth of trade. And they said, give it to the Arabs and let the Arabs take over these companies, take over these factories, create their own companies, take over these apple orchards and these orange orchards, and create their own companies and create a fruitful and an unbelievable economic boom for the Gazan people. Let them produce. Let them be a productive member of society. But the first thing the Arabs did, first thing Hamas did when the Jews left, was they burned down the factories that were left for them, that were paid for by Jewish philanthropists who figured, hey, let's help the Arabs. Let's help them create a state. They burned down the factories. They burned down the greenhouses. And they used the sites of these places as training grounds for terrorism. And then they started launching missiles into Israel, into the southern towns. The southern towns they later came and massacred. People in Sderot, and we use Sderot because they were the main town that got the brunt of the attacks over 20 years. People of Sderot not only received the brunt of the attacks, no child who is in his 20s today in Sderot knew a childhood where he didn't have to be 5 feet away from a bomb shelter. No person living in Sderot who's been living there for 20 years or so has known life where rockets weren't landing feet away from them as they cowered in bomb shelters. Nobody living in Sderot was living a peaceful life. And yet the people of Sderot continued to believe that there could be peace with the Arabs in Gaza, and continued to believe that they could somehow forge some kind of alliance with these Arabs. They somehow believed that if they took them to their doctor's appointments in Israel, because, of course, Arabs come to Israel for doctors, if they took them to the hospital when they were injured, if they brought them food, that somehow this would generate some kind of goodwill and peace. And all the little towns around Sderot felt the same way. But they learned their lesson on October 7th, 2023. They learned their lesson when thousands of Arabs came over the border and massacred their towns, destroyed their towns. So not only did these people live with the indignity of having bombs landing on their heads for 20 years with the world not giving a damn, not only did these people live with the fear for their life every single day, with the knowledge that their children are growing up in bomb shelters and the psychological damage that does to their children, and that the world didn't care. But not only did they have to grow up with that, and not only did they have to live with that, but now thousands of Arabs had come into the country and were killing them in their homes, in their streets, and in their bomb shelters. We're massacring them. We're cutting them apart. We're burning them alive. We're cutting their heads off. We're raping them. It's unbelievable that the world, the entire world, just ignored it. They just didn't care. Now, if this was a town in Africa, or this was a town in America, or this was a town in France, or a town in Germany, or anywhere else in the world would be going nuts. The UN would be condemning the terrorists. The world would be demanding that these terrorists be brought to justice. The armies of the world, the allies of these countries, would be sending their armies in to help them. There would be so many people out there condemning. There'd be marches in the street. There'd be riots in the streets because they're human rights of these poor Italians, blacks, or whoever were being stolen from them. And we had to restore their human rights. We have to restore democracy. We have to save the people. And they would rightfully be protesting, and I would have no issue with the protests at all, because that would be the right thing to do. But alas, it's only right in other countries, it's not right in Israel. Nobody in Israel warrants that kind of interference from other countries. No, nobody in Israel warrants that kind of care. Now, I used to think it was because Israel was a pariah state, that for some reason the Arab propaganda was created in 1964 by the Egyptian Yasser Arafat and the Palestinian Liberation Organization took hold, and that the world bought into this false narrative that there was a country that existed before Israel and that people were displaced. And I naively believed that because of that false narrative, that because they sold it so well, because their public relations was so much better than the Israeli public relations, that the world just believed it. I naively believed that. And I felt, I believed that that was the reason why the world just didn't care what happened in Israel, what happened to the Israelis. But as time went on, and as I got older and smarter and wiser and more experienced, I realized it had nothing to do with Israel being a pariah state. It had nothing to do with Israel's stature in the world. It had nothing to do with Israel's allies or Israel's enemies. It had to do with the fact that Israel was Jewish. It had to do with the fact that the majority of people living in Israel, the majority of citizens of Israel, are Jewish. It had to do with the fact that the Jews had their own country, that the Jews had their own homeland, that the Jews built a country. They made a green country out of a desert wasteland that existed before that, before they showed up. And I suddenly realized that it had nothing to do with Israel, had nothing to do with the so-called Palestinians, it had nothing to do at all with any of that. It had to do with the fact that the Jews were there. And as I did more research, I started understanding even more. I started understanding that there's a hadith in the Quran that says that any land that is occupied by a caliphate, any land that is conquered by a caliphate and becomes Muslim land forever, and any government that takes over that Muslim land is a usurper and has to be destroyed as an infidel. And I realized that no matter how many peace treaties, no matter how many times Israel has to sit down at a table with people with blood on their hands, no matter how many times Israel forges peace with Arab countries, the end of the day, the truth is that the Hadith still exists and that Israel will still be considered a usurper, an infidel, and that war will always come to the infidel and war will always come to destroy Israel. There'll always be a movement to destroy Israel, because those that believe in Muhammad, those that believe in the Quran, will continue to follow the rule of the Quran, will continue to follow what the Quran says they should do, which is destroy the Jews wherever they are. If they are a Muslim land, particularly destroy them. And since Israel was part of the Ottoman Empire, and the Ottoman Empire was one big caliphate, one big Islamic caliphate, then, of course, they have no choice but to destroy Israel, which is why the Oslo Accords didn't work, which is why nothing has ever worked when it came to negotiating peace with the Arabs, which is why Arafat continuously walked away when the only condition Israel gave was that you have to recognize a Jewish state and live peacefully next to a Jewish state when you create your Arab state. Even when he was offered 98% of Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem as his capital, he walked away. Because he couldn't, even though he was a Christian, pretending to be a Muslim, but even though he was a Christian, he couldn't accept a deal where he had to accept Israel as a state, because that would be a violation of the Quran and they would kill him. It would never work, and he knew it wouldn't work, and so why sign a peace deal, and why give in and have the radical Islam come after you? So he refused every single rational offer that Israel gave. And it continues till today. Israel could offer 100% of Israel and just keep a speck of land, and that still wouldn't be good enough. They will not be happy until Israel is destroyed. They will not accept anything until Israel is destroyed. Israel cannot exist on Arab land. And we have to understand that. Islamic land is Islamic land, and there's no Jewish state on Islamic land. You can't have it. Now, once the Jewish state are gone, the Jews could live as dhimmis in an Arab state. That they'll accept that. And a dhimmi is, of course, a second-class citizen who has to pay a special tax to his Arab overlords. Jews have lived as dhimmis for centuries in different Arab countries. And that they would accept, but no state run by Jews, no state that is a Jewish state, that is totally unacceptable for the Arabs. So I'm not the only one in the world who understands this. And I'm sure the politicians and the people who are negotiating peace understand this. And I'm sure they also understand that you can't impose Western democracy and Western values on the Middle East. I'm sure they understand that too. The problem that gets in the way, and this is the continuous problem that gets in the way, and this is something that is the crux of the problem, Israel knows how to deal with this problem. Let me just go back and say Israel knows how to deal with this problem. If the Israeli government had free rein, this problem would have ended a long, long time ago. But because they rely on Western money, because money is used as blackmail, essentially, blood money, Israel backs down because they want to take the money, because they want the weapons and they want the money. And Israel becomes a weaker nation because of that. I really wish... years ago, Yossi Beilin, who was the foreign minister of the State of Israel at the time, spoke at a conference I was at. Now, I'm not a big fan of Yossi Beilin, never was, and I don't think he was a good politician, and I really think he was bad for the State of Israel. But what he said at that conference rang true and still rings true today. He said, Israel doesn't need foreign money, Israel doesn't need foreign aid, Israel doesn't need foreign weapons. Israel has enough GDP to survive on their own, and they have enough industry, especially military weaponry, to create their own weapons. They don't need anybody's help. They take Western help because they believe that if they get into a jam, then the Western countries will come and save them. So they keep Western allies simply because if the Arab states somehow build up an army strong enough to destroy Israel, at least they know America and some of the other Western states will come and save them. And that's the only reason they keep connection with the Western countries. Other than that, Israel could survive on their own. So if that's the case, and I believe that's even more the case today, 20-odd years later, then why is Israel cowering to America? Why is Israel bending? There should be no bending. We have hostages. Go and get our hostages, regardless of what anyone else thinks. You know, every time Israel delays, every time Israel stops, every time Israel stops to think, every time Israel backs up, every time Israel doesn't do what they should be doing, all the Arabs see is weakness. You see, they live in a country in a region that might makes right. And that's always been the case in the Middle East. If I hit you, if you don't hit me back twice as hard as I hit you, then you are a wimp and I'm going to hit you again and again and again. But if you hit me back really hard, I'm going to think twice before I hit you again. That has always been the philosophy of the Middle East. That's always been the case. That's always been the way the Middle East has worked, politically, for sure. And people living in the Middle East understand this. They understand that Western democracy and Western diplomacy doesn't work. They've seen it over and over and over again fail. Peace treaty after peace treaty after peace treaty fail. And they fail for the simple reason that the Western world doesn't understand Middle Eastern way of life. They don't understand the Middle Eastern thought. You saw this. This was clearly in display when George W. Bush, during the first Gulf War in 1990, George H.W. Bush, the father, sent his negotiator to Iraq to negotiate a peace in Iraq. And he sent Condoleezza Rice, a black woman, to negotiate with an Arab leader. Now, not only do Arabs look down on blacks because Western integration hasn't reached the Arab world, nor I don't think will it ever. But not only do they look down on blacks, and they still call blacks cushies, and they're second class, third class citizens in some cases in some Arab countries. Not only do they see that, but it's a woman who's also a second-class citizen in our countries. So not only did he send somebody who's a third-class citizen, he sent a second and a third-class citizen. How in the world is Saddam Hussein supposed to negotiate with that? So he laughed. And you can see it in the press conference. You'll go to Google and look at that press conference where Condoleezza Rice has a press conference with Saddam Hussein. And take a look at Saddam Hussein's face as they're talking about their negotiated peace. The Gulf War went on after that because it was a joke. And that just proves that America doesn't understand Middle Eastern sensibilities. They don't understand the idea of Arab thought or of Middle Eastern thought. But the Israelis understand it. They've lived through it. They've been there almost 100 years. They get it. And because they get it, they are more equipped to handle these kind of situations than the Americans. And by bowing to the Americans and saying to the Americans, okay, we're not going to do this, and we're not going to do that, and we're going to understand what you have to say, and we're going to understand what you want to say. By bowing to the Americans, they are weakening themselves, not only physically weakening themselves, which they are, but in the eyes of their enemies of the Middle East, they're weakening themselves. And by weakening themselves, they are putting their citizenship at danger in order to appease their ally who's giving them money. This makes absolutely no sense. I know it doesn't. But that's really the reality of the situation. That's what's going on. And so we take a look at the hostages. Now, any country in the world, including the United States, and for some reason they didn't do it in this case because they didn't want to make Israel look good. But every country in the world where hostages are taken, they do everything in their power to go and get the hostages back before the hostages are killed. And in the first couple of weeks that the hostages were taken, Israel held back. They didn't go in. They didn't do anything to release the hostages. And that was the time to do it. You know, 300 people were taken, and Israel did nothing to save them. Neither did America, by the way, who, you know, a bunch of hostages were Americans. But America held back because had they gone in, and they did send troops in, but very quietly, but had they gone in full force to release their hostages, they would have had to release Israeli hostages, and that would have made America look bad in the world's eye. Because God forbid America should go and save Jews. So once again, it comes back to the fact that Israel's Jewish. So let's look at these protests that are happening worldwide. These anti-Israel, pro-Hamas protests that are happening everywhere. We know that they're paid for by lefty organizations, and they're fully funded and heavily funded by Iran. That we know. That's been traced. You can look it up in the New York Post. You can look it up in the Washington Examiner. You can look up in the New York Times, ran an article on it. You can look it up. They have a pretty good idea who's funding these protests and these riots that are happening across North America and across Europe. But the riots that are happening, the protests that are happening, are not protests against the state of Israel, which is shocking to me. Not really. I've spoken about this a lot. It's not really shocking to me, but it should be shocking to everybody. Any normal person with a working brain should be shocked by this. The idea that these protests are against Jews, but not Israelis, should be repulsive to any normal person living anywhere in the world today. The fact that synagogues are being attacked, the fact that Jewish schools are being attacked, the fact that globalizing the Intifada, as they're calling for, is calling for the indiscriminate attack on Jewish people around the world, should be repulsed and should be condemned universally, but it's not. Nobody is condemning it. Yes, there's one or two countries that may have banned these protests, but in general, there's no major condemnations, no riots on the streets, no counter-riots on the streets, no counter-protestations on the streets. And why is that? Why is it that everybody's so quiet when these people are calling for the annihilation of the Jewish population around the world? Why is it that everyone's so quiet when school children are put at risk and schools are being shot up? Why is it that people are so quiet when synagogues are being burned with people inside them? Why is it that people are so quiet when a group of radical crazies are running down the street yelling "Gaz the Jews"? Why is it that the world is so quiet when another synagogue, I mean, there was a synagogue that was lit on fire with Jews inside it just after the anniversary of Kristallnacht, and another synagogue was lit on fire as the Jews were going into it. So, but it's synagogues being lit on fire, not Israeli embassies. Not Israeli military outposts. The places that are being lit on fire have nothing to do with the state of Israel, but they do have to do with Jews. So is the attacks on the Jewish population terror attacks on Jews? Of course they are. And they should be treated that way, as terror attacks on the Jewish population. This is how they should be treated. This is how they should be looked at and viewed. These are not pro-Hamas. These are not Palestinian protesters, as the media likes to label them, whatever that means. These are attacks, indiscriminate attacks, on the Jewish population of the world. Terror attacks on the Jewish population of the world. Everybody who stands up, anybody who stands up, and yells globalized intifada, or yells gas the Jews, or yells Hitler didn't finish his job, or yells Heil Hitler, should be arrested as a terrorist. Because their sole goal, and the sole goal of these attacks in the around the world, is to terrorize the Jewish world population. There's no goal, there's no objective political goal of freeing Palestinian prisoners. There's no objective political goal of freeing land or negotiating a new land deal. There's no political goals at all in attacking Jews in North America and Europe. The only thing that happens when you do that is you terrorize world Jewish population, not world Israeli population, world Jewish population. And many Jews in the world have nothing to do with the state of Israel. They are not citizens of the state of Israel. They do not represent the state of Israel. They're just living their lives in whatever country they live in, hoping that they don't get killed by some crazy Arab running down the street yelling, "Kill me." And the world sits quietly by as the Jewish population gets attacked. Politicians can't bring themselves to say we condemn this anti-Jewish behavior. Instead, they say we condemn this anti-Jewish behavior, but we also condemn Islamophobia, as if one has something to do with the other. As if one is the result of the other, which it's not. There have been no attacks on Islamic houses of worship by Jews anywhere in the world. There have been no attacks on Islamic people in the streets anywhere in the world perpetrated by Jewish people. There have been no shootings of Islamic schools by Jewish terrorists. This hasn't happened anywhere in the world. There have been no mosques that have been burned down with Islamic people inside by Jews. Nor have there been mosques attacked at all by Jewish population. There have been no anti-Muslim graffiti scribbled on places of Muslim worship by Jews. This kind of terror does not exist on Jews against Muslims. So equating anti-Jewish behavior by Muslims, and majority of attacks have been by Muslims, to Islamophobia, the fear of Muslims or the hatred of Muslims, however you want to put it, is actually attempt to play down the importance of condemning anti-Jewish behavior. The politicians don't want to condemn anti-Jewish behavior. Maybe they feel it's justified. Maybe they feel that the Jews deserve it. Maybe they feel that if more anti-Jewish behavior happens and more attacks on Jewish communities happen around the world, the Jews will finally leave their countries and rid them of the horrible spectacle of Jews. Maybe that's what they feel. I don't know. I'm not in their heads. I'm not a politician. I have no idea. What I do know is that Jews around the world are now in grave danger. Jewish institutions and synagogues are the only institutions and synagogues that have to lock their doors. The only ones that have to check cameras and take pictures of license plates and put up millions of dollars worth of security for every building that they own and that they operate out of. There's no other religion that has to do that. I walk by churches and mosques on a daily basis, and I see people coming and going, and I don't see any security guards at mosques and synagogue and in churches. I don't see any gated communities. I don't see any renovations being done to their buildings to make them safer. I don't see any security cameras or very few security cameras. And I wonder, why is it that the Jewish institutions have to be fortresses, but everybody else gets to worship the way they want to worship? I have to wonder that in a free and democratic society, in a Western civilized society, why are Jews the only targeted religion? And if you want to tell me that it's because of Israel, then I have to wonder, why? Why because of Israel? how does the Jewish community suddenly become pariahs because of a country? It doesn't make sense to me. Sure, the country might be a Jewish country, but the country doesn't represent the Jews, and the Jews don't represent the country. So I don't get it. And I don't get when Bashar Assad was running Syria, there were no attacks on Syrian restaurants, no attacks on Syrian mosques. Nobody seemed to care. And when other ethnic minorities are being tortured and attacked in various countries, I don't see any attacks on Chinese for torturing people in their country. I don't see any attacks on any other country or any other people. It's just the Jews. So one has to wonder, and it doesn't take very long to stop wondering and start understanding, that the attacks on the Jewish community institutions and synagogues and houses of prayer and places where Jews go have nothing to do with the state of Israel. Sure, that might be the excuse, that might be the reason that this happens. And I use that very loosely. That whole idea of the reason this happens is very loose. But it's not the truth. And if we want to talk about truth and we want to be honest, the honest answer is that it happens because the Jewish community is hated. People hate Jews. And that this hatred has always bubbled underground and then suddenly it's rising up now because they have an excuse. That's the only reason. That's the only reason that this could possibly be happening. I can't think of any other reason. I'm not sure if you could think of any other reason. Because that's the only reason I could see it happening. The idea that we could come this far in human rights, in believing that people are free and equal, in believing that we live in a multicultural society, to think that we could come this far and then realize that everything that is multicultural, everything that is a melting pot, everything that believes that, every philosophy that believes that American society kind of melts together and everybody is equal, just falls apart when it comes to the Jewish community. And it's not that the Jews in the Jewish community do anything to separate. No, it's not true. 80% of the Jewish community is assimilated into society. 80% of the Jewish community doesn't even affiliate with Judaism. And so the hatred, the irrational hatred against the Jews is not an inbred thing. It's not something that babies born with and say, "Oh, Jews, I hate Jews." That doesn't happen. It's taught. It's taught from generation to generation, and I don't know why. I had a theory, and I floated the theory a few years ago on the show. I'll share it again. The theory that I have, that I think that is the core of this kind of Jew hatred, is the fact that the Jews were given the Torah, the Jews were given the Bible by God. And the Jews chose to accept the Bible by God. They weren't the chosen people, they were the choosing people. They chose to accept the Torah. God didn't choose them, they chose God. And there's a very difference, because the Christians in the early 18th century flipped that around and said Jews were the chosen people. It's not true. Jews chose God. The teachings, the Jewish teachings, ancient Jewish teachings, tell us that God went to every nation and offered the Torah to every nation, and every nation said no, but the Jews said yes. The Jews chose God. God didn't choose the Jews. And so knowing that and understanding the dichotomy between being the chosen people and being the choosing people, it's totally different. But since the world understands the Jews as the chosen people, as God's chosen people, there's a jealousy. So when the New Testament came out, the Christians who wrote the New Testament couldn't sell the New Testament. How do you sell a new covenant with God when the chosen people are still around? So you had the Crusades and you had the Inquisitions trying to get rid of the Jews, trying to get rid of the people who still lived under the guise of the Old Testament, under the old covenant with God. Kill them, make them convert, make them accept the New Testament, the new covenant with God, and then yours becomes superior. And it worked to a certain extent. Jews were conquered and they were dispersed, and Judaism lived on, but not as strongly as it lived on when it had its own country, not as strongly as it lived on when it had its temple and when they were practicing Judaism and they were close to God. Then Islam came along and said, hey, wait a second, now we have a new covenant with God. So the people with the old covenant and the people with the older covenant have to be destroyed. So then you had the jihads. And for centuries, they were killing Christians, they were killing Jews, forced them to convert or die. It was kind of the same thing that Christians did centuries before. Convert or die. That was the option many, many people had. And many people converted, many people died. And now we're at a point where Christianity, Judaism, and Islam live together in the world. And they compete against each other, not for membership, but in certain circles, in certain radical circles, for who is more in favor with God. That's what they're competing with. That's what they're competing against. Who has the truth when it comes to covenants with God? And so Muslims say, we do, and so nobody else could exist, because if you believe that you have a covenant with God, then you are a heretic and you have to be killed. Christians say, you're all going to burn in hell. If you don't believe in Jesus, you're all going to burn in hell. So we're going to try to save you. And so evangelical Christians run around trying to convert Jews or trying to convince Jews to go to the state of Israel, to move to Israel, and support Israel with billions of dollars because they want Jews to move to Israel, because the book of Revelations, which is the final book of the Christian Bible, says that all Jews must then gather into Israel. And then the four horsemen of the apocalypse will come, and they will come down off the mountain, and it will give the Jews a choice: accept Jesus or burn in the eternal hell. And if the Jews don't accept Jesus, they will burn, and anyone who accepts Jesus will continue on to the Messianic era. That is what the book of Revelation says, and that's what Messianic Jews and evangelical Christians try to push. So that's why they're so gung-ho about supporting Israel and encouraging Jews to move to Israel, because they want the prophecies of the book of Revelation to come true. And the Jews want to live their lives. That's it. They don't care about superiority. Nobody cares about superiority. Nobody cares about other people and they're coming for God. You want to live and you want to believe in what you believe in. Believe in what you believe in. Jews are the ultimate libertarians. They believe live and let live. And we don't stand against other religions, and we don't try to encourage other religions to move on or to join us or to give up what they believe in. We believe in what we want. We believe in what we believe in, and we want to be left alone. That's it. Jews just want to live in peace, be left alone, and serve our God the way we serve our God. It hasn't happened since the advent of Judaism. It hasn't happened in centuries and centuries and centuries and millenniums. But that's all Jews want. And that's all Jews have ever wanted. If you read ancient Jewish texts, that's all they ever wanted. Let's live in peace. Everybody else can do whatever they want. We live in peace. We want to live and serve our gods the way we serve our God. Just leave us alone. And that's what the state of Israel wants too. We want to run our country the way we run our country. Leave us alone. Let us live, and we'll let you live the way you live. You let us live the way we live. It's not an unreasonable request. It's not a crazy thing that the state of Israel wants. But alas, in the 75, 76 years that Israel's been around, they have not been allowed to do that either. Let's pray that this year, in 2026, this Gregorian year, and I said this in September for the Jewish New Year too, but I'll say it now in the Gregorian year, and hopefully somebody will listen and something will happen. Let's pray that in the year 2025 and going into 2025 now, that Israel could live in peace, that Jews around the world could stop being attacked, and that the world could start caring about Jewish life the way they care about everybody else. Jewish life isn't expendable. Jewish life isn't cheap. And Jewish life should not be discarded. let the world start standing up for the Jews the way they stand up for everybody else. The world start treating the Jews like they try, like they treat everybody else. Let the human rights activists realize Jews are humans too. I'm Howie Silberger, this is Political Hitman here on Israel News Talk Radio. Don't feel free, please, to check out the website at israelnewstalkradio.com. I'll see you again next week.